We're looking at James chapter 3. We're looking at verses 1 through 12. If you want to find that, I know I have most of those passages are on your sheet, but you might want to turn there in your Bible as well. James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. While you're getting turned there, I want to share with you, I told you this morning about the horse trainer that was going to be speaking at the Cowboy Church's revival, and made it out there. His name is Byron, and he lives in Austin. I have seen a lot of horse trainers' work. The techniques that they use, Jeremy and I have used for the past 10 years, I guess, 8 years, something like that, on training our horses. We've had, I don't know, I'd have to stop and think about it, 5 or 6, maybe even more than that, that we've got. When we got them, they weren't even halter broke. And worked with them, and the last several years it was more Jeremy than me. But, we know, and I know the procedure for doing that. And I sat there for 2 hours in total amazement of listening to this guy. They had a just coming three, or in other words, a little over 2-year-old filly, young female horse. Her older sister, evidently, he worked with yesterday. And so they did one yesterday and they did one today. I understand the principles, and this may shoot over some of y'all and you may not care, but I understand the principles of pressure on their face and teaching them to give to that pressure, and that's if you've got a lead rope, a halter on them, or if you've got reins on them, whatever it is, you teach a horse to yield to that pressure. Well, that pressure works if you are pulling any direction on them. So it even works if you've got a rope on them and you wrap it all the way around them and you start tugging. When you know you've got there is when they turn in the direction of that pressure and they'll turn around. And he did that. But all the time he was working with this horse, he was talking about how Jesus relates to us and how we relate to God. And he made a statement many times, and I wrote it down then and kind of wrote it down again right here. He made a comment that I never thought about. He said, all a horse is you and I, okay? But he said, it's us. It's a mirror of us with horse with hair on it. And the more I watched him and the more I listened to him, the more I realized what he was talking about and the fact that when you watch an animal like a horse, you watch how they learn and how they've got a right brain and they've got a left brain, and whatever you do on one side, you got to do on the other side. And like I say, I understand all that. But it was so vivid, just the way he did it. Literally at 2 o'clock, he walked in with his horse, and if he took a step to her, she was bolting and trying to get away from him, trying to get over the out of the round pen and everything else. And y'all, I had tears in my eyes. The last thing that he did was he taught her how to lay down. She trusted him enough for him to get her to lay down. And he was laying there or sitting there on his knees, petting her. And he made the statement that it will stick with me for a long time. He said, this is why I say that a horse is just a mirror of us with hair on it. Because just like she fought and fought and fought for me to get close to her, she is enjoying so much this relaxing and laying down with me here. He said, the same thing goes for us and God. We may not realize it. If we realized how good it was with God, the moment we heard of him, we would run to his feet and we'd lay down at his feet, wouldn't we? And I was, like I say, I was watching that, and one of these days we'll hopefully get the opportunity. It'd be kind of hard to have him bring a horse in here, but one of these days we'll have an opportunity for y'all to hear him again. And I just highly recommend it. I really enjoyed it. let's say I looked down and I'd been sitting there for 2.5 hours and it seemed like 15 or 20 minutes is all it seemed like. Just the way he related it. And all the time he was doing that, I was thinking about what James said. James is a very illustrative writer. And one of the things that makes him so practical is that he gives us illustrations. And I think that's what was so powerful was watching. And like I said, I've watched many of the great guys either on TV, and I've had the privilege of going in person and watching some of the best horse trainers around, but was never so moved and never so understood some things about God as much as I did right then. And it's because you could see the horse do something and he do something with the horse, and then all the time he was just talking and he related that back to you and I with God. And so that's what makes James so powerful, is he gives illustrations. And he gives it things that we can understand. And so that's what we're going to look at. We're not going to look at probably one of the most favorite topics. Like I told you this morning, it's not me, it's what James wrote, and we're just going to talk about it, but we really need to make sure we've got our steel-toed shoes on, because James doesn't pull many punches. Interesting enough, I just kind of did a brief checking through this. I read it, and I wanted to make sure that it was true, and I've gotten through, I don't remember where I was at back over here in James. I guess I did go all the way through it. He's got 5 chapters, and I did all the way through what I was looking at. Every one of the chapters that James has, he says something about our tongue, our speech. The way we talk to one another, the way we relate to one another. I wonder why he made why that was such an important thing to him. Because he's a very practical writer, and God inspired him to show, and God was showing him that is an issue that we all have. So let's read it together. I'll read it to you. Follow along. James chapter 3. We're going to start with verse 1, read through verse 12. He said, "Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways, and if anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man." Which, by the way, let's stop there a minute. He's not talking about sinless here. The translation for that would be mature or healthy, is what he's saying. You'd be a mature man or a healthy man, able to keep his whole body in check. "When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or we take ships as an example. Although they are so large and they are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants it to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a word of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire," and listen to this, "and it's itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals and birds and reptiles and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man, but no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison." Translation for that word there is snake venom. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse man, who have been made in God's image. Out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives, or a grapefruit bear figs? Neither can salt spring produce fresh waters. Remember what I told you when you're looking in the book of James, when he says, my brothers, you better hold on, huh? He's getting ready to slam on something. We seem to have this ability to say the wrong thing at the wrong time, don't we, as human beings? Words come out wrong. They may not be exactly like we meant them, or they may be how we meant them, and we thought we were hiding it pretty well. But we have this knack of saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. It's a story talking about a stock boy who was working in a grocery store, and to his amazement, this little old lady came up to him and asked him, she said, can I buy half a head of lettuce? He was like, what? She wanted to buy half a head of lettuce. Well, he was just astounded. I can't believe she'd do this. He said, I've got to go check, ma'am. So he goes storming over, and he goes over to his produce manager, not realizing that she was right behind him, and he's looking at him, and he says, you're not going to believe this one. He said, I have this old bag out there who wants to buy a half a head of lettuce. And about that time, he turned around and saw her standing there. And then he finally said, oh, and this fine lady would like to buy the other half. We have a knack for saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, don't we? And James, like I said, talks more about what we say, or he talks about it more than any other in the New Testament, but he also talks about it in every one of the chapters that he's written. Again, he tells us we stumble in many ways. If anyone is ever never at fault in what he says, he is perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. What he's saying there is, again, it's word means mature or healthy. What he's saying is that we, when we learn to control what we say, then we've gone a long way in keeping everything in check, haven't we? We're getting there. We're healthy. Perfection there doesn't mean sinlessness. James says that we've got to learn to guard our words. And to put it more bluntly, I'm trying to put it nicely, the way James says it, we got to learn how to control our mouth, is what he says. To manage our mouth. I got looking at some of those words. Sometimes we think of a word and we think, well, I know what that means. I went on my computer and I just pulled up the definitions for managing. It says to achieve something with difficulty means to manage. To succeed in doing something, especially something that seems difficult or impossible. Another definition for managing is to handle or control something. It says to handle and keep control of something such as a weapon or a tool. Another definition for managing is dealing with something successfully. It's to deal with a situation or a process that requires skillful control or handling. I like this last one. Talking about managing either discipline or control a person or an animal. To keep control of a person or an animal or a number of people or animals, especially when they are wild or unruly. I thought that pretty well sums up what James is talking about, doesn't it? About managing our tongue, managing our mouth. He goes and he tells us why we need to. Again, James being the very descriptive, illustrative author that he was, and God inspired to write. He gives us three reasons, really, why we need to manage our mouth. And to do it, he gives us two illustrations for each thing, or six illustrations. That's, again, why I think he's such a great communicator, because he can illustrate. He can show these illustrations. So, you have that. So why it brings us to the question, why must I watch what I say? Well, there's three reasons. Six illustrations, and we'll share with you very quickly tonight. First one, he says, and that's your first blank that you have there, he tells us that our tongue directs where we go. We need to manage it because it directs where we go. It says our tongue has a tremendous influence and control over our lives. Rick Warren especially likes to say, we shape our words, and then our words shape us. There's a lot of those little sayings like out there for the book of James. Because it's something that is tiny, something that is small compared to the rest of our body, we don't need to be lulled into this thing to think that it's pretty insignificant. James is telling us it has a great power. It has a tremendous power. Verse 3 and verse 4, he shares with us what kind of power it has in giving us two illustrations. Verse 3 says, you know, that we put a bit in the horse's mouth of horses, and we can turn the whole animal. Verse 4 talks about a ship, and although it's large and it's driven by the strong winds, they're steered by a very small rudder whereby the pilot to take it where it wants to go. So the first illustration that he gives us is that of a horse, of a bit in a horse's mouth. Think about it. You have a pretty good-sized horse, fat ones like I have out at my house, you know, are about 1,600 pounds at the most. Sometimes you get a big horse, they'll get up to close to 2,000 pounds. And yet you have somebody that weighs anywhere, if they're a racehorse, they're less than 90 pounds, up to whatever size cowboy you want to put on them. But they can control that horse with just a small piece of metal in their mouth. They can control it by its mouth. Well, the application is pretty easy to see, isn't it? So it is with us. Our tongue controls the direction that we go. He uses a second illustration, that of a great big ship and the rudder that is on that ship. When I think of a ship, I think of a Queen Mary. Just thinking about that ship, it has 3 acres of recreational space on it. The anchor is the weight of 10 cars. Yet a very small rudder is what determines where that ship goes. And what James is trying to tell us, if you notice in verse 4, he says, they are steered by a very small rudder. He's telling us that our tongues steer us as well. They set the direction. They're our steering wheel. They're our guidance system. If we don't like the way we're heading, a lot of times we check a lot of other things, and maybe we ought to just check our tongue first, huh? Because it's determining a lot of where we go. And that's what James is telling us in the first verse 3 and 4. He's telling us that our tongue directs where we go, and so we need to learn to control it. The second thing that he tells us, second reason we have to watch what we say, second reason we have to manage our tongue, is because our tongue can destroy what we have. Our tongue can destroy what we have. Look at verses 5 through 8. He says, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds and reptiles and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. So like I said, each one of these, he's going to give us two illustrations. The first illustration that he gives us here of how it can destroy what we have is by that of a great forest. Think of a beautiful forest. It's easy for me to think of because when I was a kid, we were around the Sequoia National Forest. I mean, literally, they were 20 miles away from where we lived. On weekends, my dad would get off, and we would have everything gathered up, and we would load up the tent, and we would drive 20, 30 minutes, and we'd be in the heart of the Sequoia National Forest, and we'd camp. And when anybody talks about a great forest, I know what they're talking about. For those of you who have always lived in West Texas, and maybe haven't traveled much, it might be a little bit harder for you to envision it, but I can envision it. But I can also envision most of the time, or a lot of the time, I guess I need to qualify that, for the 6 years before my seventh grade year of high school, my dad was a resident deputy on an honor farm there in California, in Ojai, California. And their job was this farm raised all of the fruit, all of the vegetables, all of the meat for the entire jail of Ventura County jail facility, which was huge, by the way. The other thing was, is anytime there was a forest fire, they cranked up and they fed all of the firemen that were fighting these fires in this edges of this sequoia forest. And I could remember as a kid being horrified. You know, you see pictures all the time of the fires in California. Well, there was many times I could sit on my porch and I could look out and literally see the flames jumping around on the trees. Now, it was generally 10 miles away, something like that, but I'm just saying it was very vivid to me. So when James uses this, it talks about this illustration about consider this beautiful forest, and it can literally go up in smoke with one strike or one spark off of a match. And he says that's how our tongues are, that we can literally destroy what we've had by just simply what we say. We can lose it, lose everything that we have. I've known, and you've probably known of some people who have lost careers. I mean, we've seen them on TV, we've seen them in the news. They've lost careers over something they said. We've seen not too recently, or in recently, where how someone who was what they considered a contender, front runner for the highest office in our United States, and basically is washed out because of something that they said. Our tongue has a great significance. That's why we have to manage it. It tells us, it shows us, and it directs us where we're going. It can also destroy what we have. The first illustration, again, is that of this beautiful forest. Another thing that it does, or the other second illustration that he uses here, is that of about a zoo, or about animals. Now, think about this. When you go to the zoo, and I don't care if it's a standard zoo or if it's one of those wild safaris that you can drive around in your vehicles, you always see signs at these zoos, don't you? What do they tell us? Don't feed the animals, right? If you drive through one of the wild safaris, they'll tell you, keep your windows up and don't get out of your car. How come? Well, because as you look at those animals in the zoo, or you look at them in that wild safari atmosphere, they're over there eating grass or doing whatever they do, and you think, oh, they look pretty tame. But what can happen in the drop of a hat? Again, just watch somebody hop the fence at a zoo. Probably one of the funniest things I ever saw was a video. It was probably on Facebook, but of a guy who thought he was on a bet. He jumped into the bigger cage area of the orangutans, and I guarantee you that orangutan had him punked in a heartbeat. He was just sitting there like a little baby, and whatever that orangutan wanted to do, that was fine. And he's telling us that same thing can happen to us. He uses the word restless. And that restless means that it can change at any point. It can spring at any point, can it? He says all kinds of animals have been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. That restless, again, means that it can change in the blink of an eye. And that's the description or that illustration that he gives us about that. And then we talked about that where he talks about poison, and that's, like I say, a literal translation of that is snake venom. How many people have you seen that have been assassinated by words? I'll give you an example, and then we're going to move on. Most everybody in here, I think, is old enough to remember this name, and that is Senator Joseph McCarthy. He was a verbal arsonist, wasn't he? He just said something, he just spoke some words, and all of a sudden it was taken as fact and literally ruined many, many people's lives. And James is just making the point that we have to watch what we say. We have to watch our words. Because it directs where we go, it can destroy what we have. But this last one hits a little bit closer to home even. And that is, our tongue displays who we really are. Our tongue displays who we are. Before we get into this one, let me just get your picture in this in your mind. We all have known somebody, and you can think of somebody, I'm sure, as soon as we start talking about this, that you had one perception of them, of what they were like, until you heard them say something. And what they said totally changed your perception of what the who and what they were, doesn't it? That's what James is talking about. Our tongue displays who we are. Verse 9, again, he's going to give us a couple illustrations here. The first illustration is of our speech, of how we talk, however you want to say that. Verse 9, it says, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with the same tongue we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. From the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. And really what he's talking about is what I just said, isn't it? Someone that you thought you knew them, someone that you thought you knew where they were at, someone maybe you even thought as far as a spiritual leader is concerned. And then they say something, and it totally changes. Totally changes your perspective. It's always amazed me of how, and it's a cartoon, what is the name? I can't think of the guy's, but it's Fred and Irma. He's the guy, the one that wrote Fred and Irma. You remember the book? But what was the guy, what was the author's name? I should have wrote it down, I had it earlier. But he's a Christian writer, but he writes about one of the books is called Fred and Irma, and it talks about them. They're church families, go to church regularly. And they're going to a church that's trying to decide if they should build a family life center with a bowling alley and all this stuff in it, or should they build something like a outreach kind of facility to feed them. People that need food, and that's what the whole premise of the book is. But what I think of is he's talking about how Fred and Irma, how they're when they're at church, they're sitting in the pews, and their kids are sitting beside them, and their kids are minding them, and their kids are doing so well. And then as soon as they hit the car, they start arguing about where they're going to go eat lunch, and one wants this one wants the other, and just. What we kind of think about, this is normal going on if you've got kids, isn't it? But then what hits home is one of their kids, instead of them arguing about it, they get in the car, and it's kind of quiet because they're all contemplating the message. And finally, the little boy goes, "You know what, Dad?" said, I thought I really knew Brother so-and-so, talking about the preacher. He said, "I'm a little worried about him now." "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "Well, I don't know, but I got a feeling he's been sneaking around watching through our windows at our house." And it just drives that point home, doesn't it? that we can say something one place and say something be completely different the other. We have to watch. It tells us who we really are. That's why we have to watch it. And he uses the illustration of our speech. And the other one he uses, the next illustration, is that of a water well. Now, I could have added several here. He really talks about several different things, doesn't he? We could have looked at it that he talks about a water well. We could have looked at it that he talked about a fig tree, an olive tree, grapevines, figs. But the point of it is, what he's saying is what's inside comes out. And so the strongest one for that really is looking at that, the source or the water well, when he says, you know, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? Can a fig tree bear olives or a grape bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. The point is that our tongue displays who we really are if we just let it go enough, doesn't it? If we listen enough, we can tell. And so I just gave you a blank there, and then what is the problem? The problem is not the bit, you know, it's not the ship, it's not the forest, it's not the wild animal. The problem is not the tongue, really, is it? The problem is really, and what you put in that blank is our hearts. Our hearts are really the problem. Jesus himself told us, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So the mouth is not really the problem, is it? The heart's the problem. And so that leads us to kind of finishing up. And man, we're going to get done kind of early today, but not tonight. But anyway, it's all right. What's the solution? Well, the solution is for us to get a new heart. And I want to qualify what I'm talking about. There's an old illustration, an old story about some people that had a pump in a well, and they didn't like the way the water was when it came out. And so they pulled the pump, and somebody had the bright idea. They repainted the pump a different color and put it back down in the well, expecting that it was going to do something better with the water. See, the problem is we can't just keep repainting the pump, can we? We've got to do something about the well. And so we have to be very careful. Ezekiel says, rid yourself of all the offenses. 2 Corinthians, he talks about that we are a new creation. If man be in Christ, he is a new creation. Psalms, though, and this is where I want us to see. For those of us in here tonight especially, when you say a new heart, the first thing you think of is, well, inviting Christ in your life. And yes, that's the place you got to have that. But for those of us that have him there, sometimes we have to do like David, and that is what he said in Psalms 51. And he cried out, he said, create in me a clean heart, O God. That's what I'm talking about. We have to get a new heart. We have to get it cleansed. Because it's the problem. The tongue is not the problem. The problem is what's pushing the tongue. The second thing that we need to do is we need to ask God for help every day. Now, it may sound silly to you. I don't think so. I think all of us in here can relate. But, you know, we need to get up every day and, Lord, help my tongue to be what it needs to be today. And he will do that. Now, there's another part of that, isn't it? If we want to pray that prayer, then what we have to do is we have to put him in. In other words, we spend time in God's Word. The more time we spend in his word, the more his word's going to come out in us rather than what the world's putting us. And then the final thing, the final solution, and this is so practical, I tell you what, we need to think before we speak. I had a kid in class he was one of those kids that really wanted attention. And so the way he got attention at home was he asked a lot of questions. He asked a lot of questions. Still saying it that way, just like I did this morning, huh, Jay? I'm getting bad about saying asked. Asked a lot of questions. And I'd be trying to show him something, show him how to build something. And by the time I gave the instructions, he would have 25 questions. So I initiated a rule with him. Before he asked me a question, he had to ask himself the question 3 times silently. Now, it worked. Because I would see him, he'd be there, and he was the kind of kid, you could see him asking himself the question. And then he wouldn't ask me what he was going to say, because he knew the answer. Well, maybe we need to do that with our tongue, huh? Maybe before we say something, we ought to say it to ourselves quietly 3 times before we spout it out. I think a lot of times we find ourselves saying things honestly, and they just come out wrong. But I think a lot of times we get so good at saying things politically correct that every now and then some things slip out the way we really feel. And in those cases, we really need to look at the source, don't we? We need to make sure our heart's right. We were talking in Sunday school this morning about EGR people. Now, those that are from the Sunday school class, you know what I'm talking about. Anybody else know what an EGR person is? Extra grace required. Okay, I call them EGR people. We all have people in our lives, or have had people in our lives, that are EGR people. They just require a little bit more grace than others do. And so we need to be very careful, don't we? Some of those EGR people, we can assassinate them very quickly by what we say. Now, I confessed to my Sunday school class, so I'm going to confess to y'all too. This weekend, I had one of those EGR people in a class that I was teaching. He is a plumber that just drives me crazy. Asks the silliest questions. You can give him the information, and 3 days later he'll call asking for the exact same information again. It is so bad that he actually lives and works in Midland. But the bosses that all kind of head up the classes that I teach for him in Midland, they made him go to Lubbock to a class because they didn't want him sitting in the class with them. He's an EGR person. Now, I will also confess, I know what his phone number is. It displays on my phone. And yes, there has been times I have just pushed the button and just let it ring. There's been times I've been driving along and I see his name and I'm just like, oh, Lord, no. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? You've got people in your life like that. Those are the ones that we really have to, I think God uses them to help us change our hearts. Because this guy will do anything I ask him to do. I have a lot of books and computers and stuff like that that I have to haul in and out of these classes. He got there, got all done, and I mean, he picked up everything. He took everything to the truck. He carried my book, everything. I mean, he really does. Alty was telling the class while I was having surgery, when I was in after surgery, she talked to him every day. Every day he called to check on me during surgery. But yet I see him as an extra grace required person. But how does God see him? Think maybe God's trying to teach me a lesson there? Yeah. And I understand it, and I'm working on it. Sometimes I just hit the button and let it ring, I'll tell y'all. But what James is trying to tell us is that our tongue is a display of what our heart is. And when we recognize that, we recognize these illustrations that he has shown us in his life, in his life, or in our life, then it's to help us change that heart issue, isn't it? It's very easy for us to look at these passages and go, man, he sure is down on talking. No, he really gets to the heart of it, doesn't he? And it's a heart issue. So, the good news is, for the next couple sermons, messages that we're going to be looking at in James, he eases off the tongue just a little bit, but not a whole lot. But I do hope that, because of us going through and looking at it, it really brings it to where God can show us things that are in our lives and continue to work with us, continue to get us where we want to be. I'll end with this. I found this and I thought it was hilarious. Maybe it's my sick preacher's brain. But it was on a tombstone. And it says this. It says, here lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th day of May began to hold her tongue. I'm going to end with that one.